We're on Daf Kuf Beis Amud Beis, pretty much on top of the Amud, and we'll count down two lines. The Omar Rav Shisha Breid Rav Idi. So let's just summarize the last point that we discussed yesterday, was that if you have an Ohel, the requirement is that there be a Tefach of a gag, a flat area on top. And to create a new ohel would be a violation of Melechah Shabbos. We spoke about adding to a pre-existing ohel. We spoke about a temporary ohel. Now Rav Shisha Breid Rav Idi raises the problem of certain kinds of hats that were apparently common in those days. It's called a Siyone, and it's apparently a felt hat, and the question is, could there be a problem when you stretch out this hat and you put it on top of your head that you're opening something that actually has a roof to it? That's how large these hats were. So if Shisha says shari, you're allowed to, you know, you're allowed to wear these hats, we're not afraid that you're creating an ohel by placing this hat on top of your head. And the Gemara objects, Vasanya, we have a brisa that says asur. It means that this hat could be considered an ohel. Lo kasha, hada isbe tefach, hada lesbe tefach. In other words, you have a kind of a very wide hat that really forms an ohel over his countenance, over his face, because it's got the width of a tefach. And Rashi adds that this was a kind of a hat that was used to block out the sun. You know, if you're a little bit interested in art, you know, you'll remember that there are very famous pieces of art that have these kind of very, very wide hats. But Rav Shisha is talking about a case of lesbe tefach. So the brim of the hat is not one tefach wide. So therefore, by wearing the hat, you're not creating an ohel over your head. So the Gemara asks about something else. Elamei ata, if you're telling me that wearing garments in the case of a Siyana that has the width of a tefach is a violation of Oel, then Shirbev Beglime Tefach is Hachinami the Asur. What happens when you take your talis and you stretch it out in order to do ituf, in order to cover your head, and it certainly has a width of a full tefach and it's on top of your head? Is anybody going to say that that's Asur? And the Gemara assumes that we never heard and we never saw anyone who was of the opinion that this is Asur. And the Meiri says the reason why it's not Asur is because it's called Derech Malbush. It's not something that is an Ohel, it's just that's the way you wear it, and it covers your head. And if that be the case, then the same thing should apply to a Seyona, even if it has a Rochav Tefach, it's Derech Levishoso, and anything you wear is not considered Asiyas Oel. Ella, therefore, the Gemara backtracks and says, for sure, there's no problem and no Iser of Asiyas Oel by wearing Begadim. That's always Derech Levisha. The Brisa says that it's Asur. It's not talking about the putting on the Kova, this felt hat, but rather walking out into Rosh Hashanah and wearing this wide-brimmed hat. And once this is a very wide hat, we're always afraid that maybe it's going to fall off. Let's say the wind will blow it off when he's out there in Rosh Hashanah. And then he may be tempted, without even thinking, to pick up the hat and carry it for Amos in Rosh Hashanah. So the Iser here in this price has nothing to do with creating an ohel, because as we said before, Derech Levisha is antithetical to the creation of an ohel. And if this be the case, then we can certainly reconcile Rav Shisha with the Braisa in a whole different way. We don't have to talk about Tefach or not Tefach. And the issue is whether or not the Chashchamim are Choshesh, are they afraid that maybe this hat will fall off or not? Ha de mehadak, ha de lo mehadak. When Rav Shisha said that you're allowed to walk with this hat on, and what he meant was, even in Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, he's allowed to walk out, that's a case where he ties it down very tightly around his neck, you know, like the old cowboy hats. You know, in other words, he has a lace that goes around one side of his neck and the other side of the neck. And therefore, we're not going to assume that he's going to take apart this ritzua, this strap, or this lace, which ties his hat down to his head. And therefore, if it's tied securely around his head, we assume it's not going to blow off. And we therefore don't have to worry about maybe he would carry it for Amos and Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. So again, the Gemara is assuming now, Lemaskana, that there's no Isur to wear this hat, even if it has a tefach, by virtue of the fact of Asiyas Oel. That's not the problem. What the source of the issue is whether it's Mahudak or Eina Mahudak. In the case of Eina Mahudak, the Loma Hadik, it's not tied around securely around his head, and therefore we're afraid that it might be blown off by a wind, and then he might come to carry it for Amos. So the issue is Meleches Hotzah. That's the way Rashi learns this sugya. Rabbeinu Chananel disagrees, and Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Chananel as saying that even Lemaskana Sasugya, we still have an Isur Mishum Oel, and both the Braisa and Rav Shisha are dealing with a case of a kova that has the width of a tefach. And when the Gemara differentiates between Mahudak and Eino Mahudak, Mahudak means, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, a kova kosha. It's made of very strong, sturdy material. She'eino miskofev. And it doesn't bend. And therefore it's not Nireh Ka'ohel. I'm sorry, it's Nireh Ka'ohel, I meant to say. In other words, an ohel is something that is kind of a flat surface that covers that which is underneath it. And in the case of something that's mehudak, and it's eino miskofev, then Rabbeinu Chananel learns that it is considered Michseh Ka'ohel, and therefore you're not allowed to wear it. If it's lo mehudak, says Rabbeinu Chananel, it's a kova rach, it's made of a soft substance, a material that bends, hanichvach, v'eino nirika oel. You know, it's more like a malbush that he sort of bends over his head, and therefore he's allowed to wear it on Shabbos. This is the Rashba. I'm sorry, this is Rabbeinu Chananel. And the Rashba asks the following question. He says, there's one extra word in the Gemara, and the reason I mentioned this Rashba to you is because it's an interesting methodology that could really help us throughout Shas. He says that there's an extra word that's out of place here, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, and that's the word Ella. And the Rashba says that the word Ella always indicates Chazra Ba HaGemara, that the original distinction is no longer relevant. We've completely slugged it up. So drop the distinction between Tefach and less than a Tefach, that's irrelevant. And according to Rabbeinu Chananel, that's not irrelevant at all. It's very relevant. We really have to know whether it could be an OL, meaning if it's wide on top and it has the tefach, then if it's lo mehudak and it's einu nichpal, then we say it's michzike OL and it's us. But you first have to get the precondition that it's got to be rochav tefach. And therefore the word ella in the objection of the Rashba against Rabbeinu Chananel is out of place. And the Rush, as a matter of fact, went as far as to say that Rabbeinu Chananel did not actually have the girsa of the word Ella. Now, it's interesting that if you open up Shulchan Aruch in Aruch Chaim Siman Shin Aleph, his psak seems to take into consideration not only Rashi's pshat here in the sugya, but also the shita of the Rabbeinu Chananel, which means that there is a problem of Asiyas Oel if you have a wide-rimmed hat that has the shear of a tefach. In addition to Rashi's shita, which is that if it's not Mehudak Barosho, then we're afraid in Rosh Hashanah to allow him to wear it out in Rosh Hashanah because he may come to carry it for Amos in Rosh Hashanah. And the Prima Gadim wants to explain that the Shulchan Aruch has an integration or an overlap of both of these approaches, Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananel, v'shayochim ofanim she'en bo mishum oel v'nesar mitam shema yotzi arba amos b'rishus harab. And he says the following, that if this hat does not have a tefach, or even if it has a tefach, but it's very soft, then what the Shulchan Aruch is going to say is that although there's no chashash of oel in the case of ein b'shul of tefach, since it's rach, therefore we're afraid that it'll be blown away by the wind, and it doesn't matter how large the rim of the hat is. It could be not such a wide-rimmed hat, but nevertheless, if it's very soft and he doesn't tie it down to his head, then we're not going to allow you to wear it in Rosh Hashanah. Now the Prima Gadim has the opposite nafkamina. He says, Chavsho me'erev Shabbos. What happens if he put the hat on Erev Shabbos? And now, the reason why the Shulchan Aruch should be matir it, if he only would accept Rabbeinu Chananel, is because he's not creating an oel on Shabbos. He's already wearing it going into Shabbos. But nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch adds Rashi's explanation, and im eino mahudok, also lots exposed to Sarabim k'shashem yovol etaltol arbamis b'shasarabim. So the Prima Gadim points out that by adding Rashi into the equation, the Shulchan Aruch has two chumras that would not apply according to Rabbeinu Chananel. The first chumra would be if there's no tefach. Now the chumra of Rashi is that since it's rach, even though it's less than a tefach, it may be blown away and we have to worry about tiltil b'shus harab. Number two, in a case where we put on the hat on Erev Shabbos, where Rabbeinu Chananel would allow you to wear the hat on Shabbos, Rashi and the Shulchan Aruch paskin like Rashi would prohibit it. Okay, so that's as far as Shulchan Aruch is concerned. Now, the Taz has an interesting comment here, and the Mishnah Berurah makes a big deal about it, that the poskim try to find various justifications because the Minhag Olam is to wear very wide hats on Shabbos. And this despite the fact that there's a Rochav of Tefach, which means that according to Rabbeinu Chananel and the Shulchan Aruch Paskins like Rabbeinu Chananel, we have a problem of Asiyas Oel. So even though, let's say, the hat is very firmly attached to his head and it's tight, we still have a problem of creating an oel on Shabbos. And yet the Minhaga Olam, as we say, is Lelech im Kavayim Rechavim B'Shabbos. And the Taz tries to come up with some justification. This leads us to the new Mishnah, which is the second, which is the first of the three Mishnahs that we have on this Amud. And this has to do, once again, with a contradistinction between the violation of Melacha D'Oraisa as opposed to Melacha D'Rabbanan. And once again, in the case of Binyan, Meleches Binyan, and if we can reduce it to a derabanan, then we could be matir it in the Migdash because of the principle of Ein Shvus b'Migdash. So, Machzirin Tzir HaTachton b'migdash avalo b'medina, but her elyon kan v'kan osu. So we're talking about utensils that have, we'll call it a kind of a door, like a shida tevu migdal has a kind of a door that's attached to the kli, like a small, let's say, wagon, and the attachment is through hinges. And there's a hinge on top that attaches the delis to the kli, there's a hinge on the bottom. Now, it seems that what really guarantees that this delis is fastened, is firmly fastened and attached to the kli, is the bottom hinges. So the Mishnah first approaches the case where the top hinge became loose. That's called nishmat mimkomo. And now he wants to put it back into that hole that holds onto this hinge. And here we're talking about an Isur Durabanon of Michze Kibbone. And hence we're going to differentiate between the Migdash where it's Mutta because Ein Shvus B'Migdash, if it's only an Isur Durabanon, as opposed to Medina, because in Medina outside the walls and the boundaries of the Migdash, it's also Isur Durabanon to re-establish the functionality of any Kli, even though he's just simply attaching the door to a hinge, and the door itself is still firmly attached on the bottom to the hinge, but he wants to do it in a more perfect way. So the Rabbanan said he's not allowed to do this. And the reason for it is because if he were to take a hammer and he would do what's called nitka b'chozek, he would knock in this we'll call it a nail or a hinge, in such a way that by result of the hammer blow, it would be permanently attached to the kli. In other words, now the delis would be firmly attached to the kli. That would be a violation of a doraisa. Here, he's not violating a doraisa. He's not doing meleches bona. He's not adding a delis and attaching it in a permanent way to the kli. He's only placing the hinge, replacing it onto the nekev, and therefore it's only a gzera. We're only afraid that maybe tomorrow, meaning next Shabbos, he may come to take a hammer and give it a blow and give it a knock, thinking that would be mutter, because he doesn't see the difference at the face of it between replacing it or knocking it in. So therefore, in order to avoid any possibility of tekiya bechozek, which would be a violation of a doraisa, therefore they made gzera, and they said you're not allowed to put it back on to the hinge. But that doesn't apply in Migdash. But in the Elyon case, so that's the case of Tzir Tachton. I apologize if I mixed it up. Sometimes I mix it up. But in any event, now we're talking, yeah, I think I got it right. We said that the Tzir Tachton is more important than the Tzir Elyon. So that was the mistake that I made. What I really should have said is that, just one second, just get this right. Right, the Tzir Elyon is more important. Right, that's what I meant to say. What really attaches, I'm sorry, cross out what I said before. What really attaches firmly the Deles to the Kli is the Tzir Elyon. And that's why the Sefer of this Mishnah says that if he has a Deles that's attached to the bottom hinge, it sort of moves around. What really keeps the delis firmly in its place is the tzira elyon. And therefore the tzira elyon, if he replaces it, then he's violating an isa doraisa, which is applicable even in the Beis HaMikdash, hence kan v'kan osur. So if there's a nishmat means it fell out, of the tzira elyon, then what's going to happen is the delis is eventually going to fall off. it's really not attached through the tzir ha-tachton. So the tzir ha-tachton would only constitute a malacha of binyan if he would take a hammer and knock it in, because then he's actually attaching the delis to the kli. And we have malachas bona in this case. Again, we have to know about ein binyan b'kelim, but that's a different issue. So that when it's the tachton, then that's going to be less of a problem. Again, as long as he's not knocking it in with a hammer, that's only an Issa D'Rabbanan when he replaces the Tzira Tachton. But when we get to the Tzira Elyon, which is primarily responsible for attaching the Deles to the Kli, then we have a problem of a Doraisa. In the Elyon, we have a problem of a Malacha Doraisa. Now, what about the fact that we're talking about attaching a delis to a kli? So Rashi, Dibri Amaskel Machzirin, says that we're talking about kelim tlushim, like shida tevo migdal. And this Mishnah is talking about a case of what's called kelim shedal soseyem nitzavos velo shochvos. In other words, we're talking about a dlosos, meaning the doors of this kli, which are vertical, as opposed to adding something, attaching something that's horizontal. And the difference between the elyon and the tachton would only make sense if we're talking about a vertical delis that has a tzir on the top and a tzir on the bottom. Now, Rashi uses a term here called chalon delis. And again, in the case of Shida Tevu Migdal, we don't use the word delis, we use the word chalon delis. It's like the window of a door. Okay, now let's talk about the case of tzir tachton, where he replaces the tzir tachton. And we said that in that case, the reisha, there's no meleches bona d'oraisa, and therefore would be matir migdash. Hatam she'eno bona d'oraisa. Rashi wants to explain why is that not a violation of binyan d'oraisa, even though our Mishnah reflects the sheet apparently that even in a kli there is meleches binyan. Mishum shekal lahoshiv esadeles kishayetze rak hatzir ha-tachton mimkomo. He says that if the tzir ha-elyon is in place, then it's very easy to reattach the deles. V'ein zo pulas binya gemura. And therefore, he's not going to be chayv. So that's the case of machzir tzir ha-tachton, where the tzir ha-elyon is still in place. And once the tzir ha-elyon is still in place, then adding and attaching the tzir ha-tachton is not considered a binyan gamur, because it's already in a situation where it's very easy to replace the door. All this is according to Tanakam. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and we've seen over and over again that Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the Tanakama, and he holds that ain binyan bekalin. So therefore, when you put back the tzir and you attach the delis through its hinge to the utensil, even in the case where he's reattaching the sefer, the tzir ha-elyon, that does not constitute meleches binyan d'oraisa, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And the reason for that is because ein binyan ustira bekele. The Rabbanan said that, when I say the Rabbanan, I don't mean the Rabbanan of our Mishnah. What I mean to say is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbanan enacted a gzera in both cases, even in the case of the Tzir HaElyon, where he's replacing the Tzir HaElyon, it's not an Iser Binyan Doraisa because it's a Kli, but rather a Bonon prohibited it because of Xera that he might come to knock it in with a hammer. And therefore, when it comes to Achzoras Tzir of Kalim, then if it's the Tzir HaElyon, which means that he might be tempted to use a patish, a hammer, then he's going to be chayev not for meleches binyan, because Rabbi Yehuda holds ein binyan bekelim, but as the Tiferes Yisrael here in his comment on the Mishnah points out, the problem here is meleches makah bepatish. But here, Rabbi Yehuda makes a distinction between the Tzir HaElyon and the Tzir HaTachton. In the case of the Tzir HaElyon, we have a serious Gzera Drabbanon and a distinction between Migdash and Medina, because he might come to knock it with a hammer, and that would be Makom Patish. But knocking hammering in a Tzir HaTachton is not considered a violation of Meleches Makom Patish. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to aser only the case of Hachzoras Tzir HaElyon. And that's only in Medina, because that's going to be a Gzeret Rabbanon Shemi Yitka B'Patish, and he'll be in violation of the Melacha of Makom B'Patish. In the case of Hachzoras Tzir HaTachton, is Mimonafshach. It cannot be considered binyan at all, because ain't binyan b'kelim according to Rabbi Yehuda. It cannot be considered makom b'patish, because the Tzir HaElyon is makom b'patish and not the Tzir HaTachton. Meaning, when a person fixes up a Tzir HaTachton, that doesn't really do it as far as the Kli is concerned, because that's just a secondary kind of strength for the Delos. But what really causes the Delos to be a Delos of the Kli is the Tzir HaElyon. So therefore, if he were to knock the Tzir HaElyon into the Kli, then he would be in violation of Makom B'Patish D'Oraisa. And the Rabbanan asked it, even if he's only replacing the Tzir HaElyon, he's not knocking it with a knife. With a hammer. And therefore, it's Gzeira D'Rabbanan in the case of Tzir HaElyon. And therefore, HaElyon B'Migdash and HaTachton B'Medina. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Tzir Deles Shida Teva U'Migdol. In the case of replacing a Deles of these different types of Kalim, they're all Kalim that have a vertical door that attaches to them, is B'Migdash Machzirin. Again, he's allowed to by hand put it back into its hinge without doing a tekia, without being tokea with a patish. And that's a heter in Migdash, but B'Medina also Lachziro. Okay, that's the case of Tzir Deles, and B'Migdash Machzirin, and a Medina also Lahachzir. Now the Brisa talks about a slightly different case, and B'Medina Dochakim, what's the case of Dochakim? And that's a case where it's not totally off the hinge. It's still sort of on top of the hinge. It's not inside the hinge, right? The hinge, let's say, has a part that's thinner and a part that's wider. So it's sort of lying flat on top of the wider part. He just has to move it in. And that was allowed even in Medina. this is not even Osir mi derabbanan. There's no Issur derabbanan at all. Because it's lo nishmat. It's considered as if it didn't really fall off and it's not detached. And therefore, we're not going to have a gzera that if we allow him to put it back in the right way, he might come to hit it with the blow of a hammer. You know, it's if it completely is removed, it's nishmat. It's yotza hatzir mimkoma legamre. Then we have to prohibit it in Medina because we're afraid Shema Yitka. But if it's still located, it's situated on top of the hinge, it just needs a little bit of a push, that's all right, that's mutter even in Medina. Now we get to Tzira Elyon. Until now we're discussing Tzira Tachton, which we said that Tzira Tachton is all, in the worst case scenario, is only a violation of a Derabbanan. But for Elyon, now we're talking about a case of the Elyon where it's completely nishmat, and he wants to put it back by hand, is kan v'kan lo yachzir. Whether it's Medina or Migdash, he's not allowed to replace it at all. That's called a binyan gamur. But we thought that everything is smooth, and we're talking about a doraisa, but the Bryce is going to throw a curveball at us. And the Bryce is going to say, wait a minute, he just put it back into the hinge. How could that be a violation of Malacha Doraisa? Even again, if you're talking about the Tzir Ha'elyon, right, it still doesn't make sense that we're talking about a Doraisa. Because he's not attaching it in a permanent way. So this is the subject of Rabbeinu Tam. Again, Rabbeinu Tam is not quoted here in our Tosis. He's quoted in the Rush. And he wants to say the following. That in the case of Dechika, where he's just pushing the Tzira Elyon back, that's one thing. And it could be that that's Osir. But he says if he actually replaces the Tzir that was Nishmat Legamre, in the case of a Tzira Elyon, that's considered Binyan Gamur. And you don't even need Yitka. You don't even have to knock it in with a hammer, as long as you're replacing it after his nishmat, and it's the Tzira Elyon, then you're in violation of Binyan Gomer Doraisa. And that's why, says Rabbeinu Tam, it's going to be Osur even in Migdash. However, if we go back to the Reish of the Braisa, and the Reish of the Braisa is talking about the Tzir Tachton, where we were Mekil, we allowed it in Migdash. That's because the whole Iser in Medina, in Achzoras Tzir HaTachton, is only Gzera Shema Yiska. It's only a Drabbanon. We're afraid that maybe he'll take a hammer. And therefore, it's only Oser in Medina, not in Migdash. V'im Toka. Let's say inadvertently he forgot it was Shabbos, or he didn't realize what he was doing, and it's a Malacha Doraisa if he takes a hammer and knocks it in. Again, we're talking about the Tzir Tachton. As far as the Tzir Elyon is concerned, we said it's complete, total violation of the biblical Iser Malacha of Binyan. Even if he's not knocking it in with a hammer, the very fact that he's replacing it in the case of Nishmat Legamre is Chayav Chatos. And therefore, if a tokea, if he knocks in the Tzir HaTachton with a hammer, he violates a Chiyuv Chatos. And therefore, in the case of Tzir HaTachton, in the worst case scenario, you could talk about a violation of a Gzera Drabbana because of Shema Yitka, and therefore it's going to be Mutter Migdash. But in a case of the Tzira Elyon, if it was Nishmat Legamre, then Kan V'Kan Lo Yachzir, because it's considered a full-fledged Meleches Binyan, in the Tzira Elyon, even in the absence of a Patish, even though he wasn't Tokeh B'Patish. Now, we want to discuss a similar case to Hachzara Satzirim, but we're going to be more machmir in the following case of something that's Mechubar Lekarka. Until now, we were talking about Kalim, and we're more Mekil in Kalim. But now we have the case of something that's Mechubar Lekarka, which is called Shelbar, Sheldus, Vishel Yitzia. And we're talking about a covering over a bar. Like I'm thinking outside here on my porch, we have, you know, certain biyuf places which are covered by a michse. Or we have a dus, which is a very large barrel, and you have a covering over it. And this barrel, which is called a dus, is mechubar lekarka. It's actually attached to the ground. And now we no longer have the issue of yesh binyan b'kelim, ein binyan b'kelim, because we're talking about mechubar lekarka. Then we have the case of yitzia. And again, a yitzia is a kind of a kli which is attached to the ground. He calls it also a kind of chavis. So that's called yitzia. I will take a look and see how he translates yitzia. Anyway, he says lo yachzir v'im hichzir chayev chatas. Anything that's mechubar lekarka, and it matters not whether you're covering it from the elyon or the tachton. It doesn't matter whether it's in Medina or in Migdash. Once it's mechubar lekarka, it clearly has a din of binyan d'oraisa. Even if he doesn't, attach it with a hammer blow, he just fits it into its place in the karka to cover the karka, cover the bar or the dus, and he's chayav achatas. Let me just see for a moment, if you'll bear with me, what is the case of Yitzia? I'm not sure that I understand what he's saying here in the Hebrew translation, but let's take a look in the English translation. Just give me a second here. Yeah. He says, he calls it an annex. So I guess what he means by an annex, this is not the impression I got before, it's some sort of an add-on to his house. He attaches some sort of a porch or adds a room to his house. He only used the word annex. But whatever it is, it's mechubar lekarka, and therefore he's chayev echatos. Any doors that are attached to the ground, even the slightest adjustment, is considered an act of construction. That's what he says in the name of Rashi. Okay. Let me just see, once I have this open, if he adds anything here. So if the hinge is out of the socket, the door is liable to fall and become completely detached. Therefore, the act of reinserting the top of the hinge, or a pivot, he calls an act of construction. And this Tana holds that yesh binyan b'kelim. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that even if the Tzir HaElyon becomes dislodged, the act of reinserting it is not a biblical prohibition, because utensils are not included in the category of labor called construction. The prohibition is only rabbinic, and therefore it does not apply in the Migdash. And this leads us to the second of the three Mishnayos on our Amud. And let's give a little bit of an introduction to this Mishnah. Again, we're still focused on the difference between Migdash and Medina, but now we want to talk about a Ratia. And a Ratia is a bandage, and they used to soak the bandages in a kind of an oily substance before Shabbos. And again, we're going to discuss a case where this bandage fell off on Shabbos, and he wants to put it back on. And what we have to know is about Meleches Memachik, which means that the Torah prohibits you from taking an anointment, some sort of a cream or an oil, and smearing it into your body. That's called Meleches Memachik. And again, if we can take the case of Ritia, where he has this bandage that has the oil or the mishchan, and we can reduce it to a drabanan, then we can be matir in Migdash. And therefore the Mishnah says, Machzirin Ritia b'Migdash. Now, what we have to understand here is we're talking about a Kohen HaOved, he's doing the Avoda in the Migdash, and he has to take off his retia, his bandage, in order to do the avoda. Because if the bandage surrounds his yad, let's say, for example, he has an injury on the inside of his hand, and he puts a bandage around it, then when he picks up the kli shares, he has now a chatzitza between his hand and the kli shares. And the classic case of such a chatzitza would be what we call Kabbalah Saddam, which is the first of the avodos after Shechit. So he has to hold on to a Mizrak, which is a receptacle, a klisharis, and he has to receive the dam by holding on to this klisharis. And if he's wearing a bandage, then he does not fulfill what the Torah says at the beginning of Vayikra, v'lokacha kohen, which means that you need a lekicha bi'atzmo shel kohen. So the kli shares has to be in direct contact with his hands, and therefore he will remove this retia before he does the avoda. Okay, he did the avoda. Now he wants to replace the retia because he has some sort of serious injury on his hand, and the Mishnah allows it. And what that means is that since putting the retia on your body is only a malacha, a violation of an Issa Drabbanan on Shabbos, therefore Ein Shvus B'Migdash. So for the benefit of this Kohen inside the Migdash, we're going to allow him to do that which is prohibited outside the Migdash, namely Hachzoras HaRetia. So I'll read to you the Hebrew translation. He writes, Rashoi HaKohen LaHachzir B'Shabbos Retia SheYisira Me'al Yodo L'Tzorach HaVodas HaMigdash Kadesh lo tochutz bein yodo liavoda, she'ein achzoras retia asura el midra bona. That achzoras retia is only a violation of gzeirah drabana, which does not apply in the Migdash. Avolo b'medina, but outside the confines of the Migdash, it is prohibited. And that's going to be a shvus of Shabbos. And in Migdash, we'll apply the principle of Ein Shvus B'Migdash. Okay, now, what exactly reduces this pu'ula, this action of Achzoras HaRetia B'Shabbos from a Doraisa to a Drabana? Now, if he would have taken the Mishcha and placed it directly on his wound, in other words, let's just cut out the retia, forget about the bandage, then by rubbing the mishcha into his body, he has violated Meleches Memachik. But here, the mishcha is not a separate substance unto its own, but rather it was absorbed by the retia. And in the case of Achzoras HaRetiyah, there's Mishra in the Retiyah, that is only a Gzeret Rabbanon, because we're afraid that he might think that he's allowed to take this Shemen and be Mamareach, the Shemen, without the wedge or the intermediary of the bandage of the retia. So he says, just one second. He says, we have to introduce here Gemara and Beitza, and that Gemara Beitza puts a whole new light on this Gemara that we're learning here, on this Mishnah, actually. The Gemara in Beitza says that Hachzoras HaRetia is prohibited even in the Mikdash, in conceptual terms. But the Gemara in Beitza allows it, Hachzoras HaRetia in Mikdash, for a different reason. And that's not because of Ein Shavus B'Mikdash, but rather because of the principle of Chatzitza in Avoda. So let me read it to you. He says, just one second. Hagmara bebeitza daf yud alpha mebeis mefa'eres she'ein atam beheter achzoras haretia mishum ein shvus b'migdash el atamu mishum she'itiru chazal sofa mishum tchilosa, which means that this Kohen needs the retia badly. He's got a serious gash. If you don't allow him to take off the retia for the sake of his avoda, which means sofa, then he's not going to do the avoda lechatchila. He'll only be willing to do the avoda if he understands that as soon as he finishes the avoda, let's say he's mekabel the dam, etc., then he immediately replaces the retia. So that's called hitiru lachzira bisofa mishum tchilasa. In other words, he's allowed to take off the retia, obviously, and not only that, he's required to do so in order to do the avoda, because otherwise it would be a chatzitza, it's not v'lokach hakohen. He would be prohibited from taking the retia after he removed it and replacing it, but we're going to allow him to replace it in order that the avoda should be done, because if you don't allow him to replace it, he's not going to do the avoda, because he's unwilling to do the avoda if you tell him that he has to take off this bandage and he won't be able to replace the bandage after the avoda. And based on the Gemara in Beitza, the sugya differentiates between two types of kohanim. We read our Mishnah and it says machzir retia b'migdash. We assume any kohen is allowed to replace a retia in migdash. And the answer is that's absolutely incorrect. It's only a kohen ha'oved. You know, just because you happen to be in the migdash, that doesn't make it permissible. What permits it is the fact that you're a kohen ha'oved. And therefore he says, and I'll read it to you, he says, Ein la tira, we cannot be mater achzoras haretia b'migdash, ela lekoina oved b'shabbos. He's doing the avodah on Shabbos. V'gami divrei ha-mishnah, shelo itira el lahachzir, mashmakach, she'im no'er she'tama heter b'mishnah senu v'shum she'ein shvus b'migdash, is yesh lahatir gam es nesinas haretia lechatchila. So in other words, when he puts the retia on on the wound, then he is smearing the mishcha that's absorbed in the retia onto his body. And although he's doing it with the intermediary of the bandage, that only reduces it from a doraisa to a drabana, meaning a gzera that maybe tomorrow he's going to take the mishcha and apply it directly to his wound without a retia. And therefore, if it's only a gzera drabanan, then the Mishnah should have told me that in Migdash we don't have this gzera drabanan. So the answer is, the Mishnah didn't even bother to tell us that you're allowed to put on the retia, because the Mishnah is not operating within the framework of Ein Shvus B'Migdash. If the Mishnah would have been operating within the framework of Ein Shvus B'Migdash, then certainly the Mishnah should have told me that not only are you allowed to be, what's the language, Machzirin, Esaritiyah B'Migdash, the Mishnah should have told me that you're allowed to be Masimim, or Meinichim Esaritiyah B'Shabbos. Why did the Mishnah skip that? I mean, it's again the same issue of Mishcha, and we're dealing with a Drabbanan. So why did the Mishnah only talk about Achzara and not about Hanacha, about the original Heter of Nesina Saratia Al Gufa? Why did the Mishnah skip that? I mean, the same Chiddush that you're telling me about Chazorah should apply in Nesina as well. Because on both ends, whether it's Nesina or Chazorah, he is taking a Ritia and it's got, you know, the oils and whatever Mishcha it has inside of it, and he's smearing those oils onto his hand. Ella, what, you can tell me, okay, we're going to allow it because of Ein Shvus B'Migdash, so tell me that Nosnim Es Ratiyah B'Shabbos. The answer is nay. Based on the Gemara Beitzah, we're talking about a Heter that's predicated on Avodah. And we're not talking about a case of Nesinas Ritia. On the contrary, we're talking specifically and exclusively about a Kohen HaOved. A Kohen HaOved is not interested in putting a Ritia on his body and creating a Chatzitza in his Volokach HaKohen. But therefore, the Mishnah is addressing the issue of Machzirin. And for sure, he's not in the category of Nosnim, because that would be the silliest thing in the world. You may imagine a Kohen has a wound and he decides to go into the Migdash on Shabbos. He's about to do the Avodah, and for one reason or another, he's going to cover his wound. That's going to disqualify his Avodah. He would never think of doing such a thing. Ella what? He wants to remove the Ritia, but he's only willing to do the Avodah if you allow him to replace the Ritia after he finishes the Avodah. That's the Chiddush of our Mishnah. That in Migdash, for the sake of Kohen, he tiru sofa mishum tchilasa, that they were matir this Iser of Achzoras HaRetia for the sake of guaranteeing that this Kohen would do the Avodah and not shy away because he wants to know that he has the guarantee that he can put back the Retia. Again, putting back the Retia is only a Drabbanan, but in and of itself, we would not allow that unless it was necessary to allow it for the sake of the Avodah. And that's going to be the underlying logic of Machzirin Ritia B'Migdash. Now, the one piece of the puzzle that's missing is why is the Gemara in Beitza completely oblivious to Ein Shvus B'Migdash? Meaning, why does the Gemara in Beitza insist that the reason for this heter of Machzir Eser Atiyah is in order to guarantee that the Kohen do the Avodah? Why not simply say that we're going to allow the Ratiya in Migdash because ain't Shvus B'Migdash? So just to take a stab at it, again, I don't know that I'm comfortable with this answer, but I think the answer might be that the principle of Ein Shvus B'Migdash applies not just to any Kohen, right? It applies when the Kohen is inside the Migdash. Just one second. And why is he inside the Migdash? It's not just the physical location of the Kohen inside the confines of the Migdash. That doesn't remove all the Shvusim. But it means that he is now focused on the Avodah. And all these other xeros and reasons that he might do X, and therefore we make a shvus, and he might do Y, they don't apply to a Kohen who's focused on the Avodah. But once he finishes the Avodah, then the Gemara thinks that we should no longer apply the principle of Ein Shvus B'Migdash. He's not focused on his Avodah. He's already implemented, he's already completed his Avodah. But the Gemara says we're going to be matir the shvus of Ritia, in the case of Machzirin, not because Ein Shvus B'Migdash, the Kohen is no longer connected to the Migdash. I mean, he might be physically located in the Migdash, I couldn't care less. But in order to calm down the Kohen and give him that sense of security, that on Shabbos he's going to be allowed to replace the Ritia and do an action which normally would qualify as a violation of a Shvus D'Rabbanon, and we're going to permit, or I should say, we're going to suspend the Shvus D'Rabbanon in this case for the sake of the Avodah. But Ein Shvus B'Migdash doesn't apply once he's already completed the Avodah. Tana Rabbanon, we learned in a Braisa, Ritiya Sheperisha Me'al Gabi Maka. So he's got a Ritiya that covers his wound, and it fell off on Shabbos. Inadvertently, it fell off. As the Braisa says, Machzirin Oso B'Shabbos. Now, we're not talking about a Kohen or Oved B'Migdash, and we're talking about Hachzorah Saratiya. We said that Hachzorah Saratiya should be Asur Midrabbanon as a Shvus Gzera Otu. He might put back the, he might use the mishcha to smear on his body directly without a ritiyah. Apparently, this brisa is of a different opinion, and that is that the Rabbanan never created a gzera to prohibit hachzoras ritiyah. Not because of danger, not because of ushmartem and pikuach nefesh v'chaibam, but rather because milsalo shlicha lo gozu be'rabbono. What are the chances that a person has this major bandage and it might fall out on Shabbos? I mean, again, it could happen, but it's not something that we anticipate. All the scenarios which were prohibited, and all the actions in those scenarios that were prohibited by the Rabbanan based on a gzer and a shvus on Shabbos, they're all actions that one would implement within the normal daily life. So that, for example, you have refuah, and they made a gzer. You have a chayat, that he takes his needle and he puts it in his lapel, and they made a gzera. And you can go on and on and on. With Mukta, you know, you're carrying Kalim, you might carry it out in Rishus HaRabim. All of these cases are what's called Milsa D'Shchicha. These are more or less, you know, activities that we are involved in during the week on a regular basis. But for a Ratiya to fall, again, these bandages were very secure. They wound them around the injury in a very strong way, very professional way. And now all of a sudden, it fell off. The ratiya fell off. That's called milsa de lo shchicha lo gazru be rabbanim. Okay, there's a long discussion here about the Baal HaMor. We'll see if we can fit that in. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, in a case where the ratiya fell from his body, you're not allowed to replace it. Here Rabbi Yehuda becomes the Machmir. But what he's allowed to do is Huchlika. In a case where the bandage did not completely detach itself from his body, it still is attached loosely to his body, but huchlika. In other words, it was moved in a position where it no longer covers the wound. And now he wants to push it over the wound. So Rabbi Yehuda says that lemata dochaka lemala. He's allowed to do it in one direction, from lemata lemala, but im lemala dochaka lemata, but megala Miktas Aratiya Umakaneach Pi Hamaka Choser Magala es Miktas Aratiya Umakaneach Pi Hamaka the Ratiya Atzma Loyikanach Mipnei Shehu Memareach Vimereach Chayov Chatas. And basically, what Rabbi Yehuda is trying to do is, he's severely restricting this heter of hachzoras retiya shenofla meileha b'shabbos, and he's going to only allow you in very limited ways to do this. So again, we're going to have to end the shir, but I just want to read to you a summary of Rabbi Yehuda, and he says the following. He says that if the dressing fell completely off the wound, it may not be replaced. But if it slipped downwards slightly, he's allowed to push it back up. If it slipped up slightly, he's allowed to push it back down. And he can expose part of the dressing. One may partially raise the bandage with the dressing on it. Right? So he has the bandage, and he has the mishcha, you know, that oily substance. And he can lift it up. I guess, if I'm not mistaken, it means he wants to get some air, you know, which is beneficial for the wound. Now he's allowed to mekaneach piyamaka. He can wipe the surface of the wound on that side, and then he can repeat the procedure, expose part of the dressing, raise the bandage on the other side of the wound,
and wipe the surface of the wound on that side. However, he may not wipe the dressing itself. So in other words, in all the cases that Rabbi Yehuda allows you to replace the bandage, that's only if part of the dressing was exposed. But on the other hand, if he wants to wipe the dressing itself, not by raising the bandage on one side and exposing part of it, but rather to do a direct memareach, then that's something that is completely prohibited. V'yemerech chayav chatos. So Belina, tomorrow we'll try to get into some of the nuances of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham. So let's just make a note of where we got up to right now. And we're on Daf Kuf Beis Amid Beis. And we're up to the Gemara that's parallel to Machzirin Retia, to the Tosus on the side of Machzirin Retia B'Migdash Avalo B'Medina. Okay then, so wish everyone so the basic principle is Rabbi Yehuda is going to restrict this heter only in the case of Nosra Al Gufo. It's not a case of Nefila Legamri where it completely fell off his body. It's only Nosra al Gufa, it still attached to his body, but Huchlaka, it slipped from the Mokama Maka, and he's allowed to push it back into place. And then he says that if he wants to clean his Maka, then he's allowed to lift up part of the Ritia, he's allowed to be Makaneach Piha Maka, in other words, he lifts up only a small part of this bandage, and then he can do kinuach of the piyah maka on that part which he exposed, that's megala miktas, and then he can put it back in its place. Or he says chozer megala miktas retiyah mekaneach piyah maka, and all that is allowed, but sida hapnimi shel haretiyah atzma lo yikaneach. That means that the tzada pnimi, right, he wants to use the mamish, the flat side of this bandage, to directly so to speak, clean off his maka, that he's not allowed to do. That's mimareach. When he uses it on the side that he picked up, that's not called tzida pnimi. That's not like a direct kind of kinua. Okay, and so we'll stop here. We're up to the Gemara, which is parallel to Tosfos Divrei Maskil Machzirin.